Reading with your kids.
Hola, ni hao, konnichiwa, assalamu alaikum, shalom, mahaba, moni moli wanji, namaste, jambo, bienvenidos. Hi, my name is Jet Li, and this is a special Protecting the Planet with Your Kids episode of the Reading with Your Kids podcast. We are so delighted that you're joining us here today. We are bringing you authors who can talk to you about climate change. Let us know why it's important to talk to our kids about climate change and how we can do that without scaring them. Our guest today is one of our friends, Patricia Newman. She is here to share with us some great insights from her brand new book, Planet Ocean. Before we invite Patricia into the studio, we want to let you know we have a whole lot of new innovations coming to the Reading with Your Kids universe this summer, the summer of 2021. We're so very excited, and we don't want you to miss anything. So we really would appreciate it if you could connect with us, and there's so many different ways to connect with us. First off, we'd love for you to subscribe to the show on the iHeartRadio app, on Spotify, on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Podchaser. Wherever you find your podcast, you can find the Reading with Your Kids podcast. We'd also love for you to subscribe to our newsletter. You can do that for free at our website, readingwithyourkids.com. And please connect with us on social media, facebook.com/readingwithyourkids, at Jedly Magic on Twitter, and at Reading with Your Kids on Instagram. Joining us right now from Sacramento in California, we love welcoming back friends of the show, and our guest today is certainly a friend of the show. Please welcome back the author of the brand new book, Planet Ocean, Patricia Newman. Patricia, good to see you.
Great to see you too, Jed. Thanks for having me on the show. It's fun to be here.
I'm always loving it when you come on. You have such a great perspective and helping us introduce kids to different ideas in the STEM field. And, you know, I know one of the things we had such fun talking about was how scientists need so many different people. You know, a veterinarian needs so many people with so many different skill sets to help them progress in the field, in their knowledge. And the same with rocket science and all these different sciences. And I just love how you're able to let everybody know that there's a place for everybody in STEM.
Yes, there is. There really is a place for everybody in STEM. And I think another thing that I try to focus on too is the fact that I write a lot about environmental issues, as you know, Jed. And I think that what I want everybody to know with this book is, even though environmental issues seem sometimes hopeless and are hard to deal with, I want people to know not only is there a place for them in STEM, but the environment is waiting for their help. There is a place for them in helping to make sure that we're good stewards of our planet.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to speak to you about Planet Ocean because that is, you know, we're talking about exploring space and, you know, people are talking about going to Mars and returning to the moon. It blows me away to think that we kind of know more about space than we know about the ocean.
I know. It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's absolutely crazy. You know, I was watching the Mars rover coverage and I'm thinking, we still know more about space than we know about the ocean.
Yeah.
We're just beginning to really explore the deep ocean. But even some of the areas that we think we know pretty well, like kelp forests or the coral reef area, we don't know as well as we think we do. Mm-hmm. We don't know a lot about the minute interconnections between some of the animals and how our habits affect them. We're only now just starting to figure out how ocean acidification might affect fish. Scientists, for instance, have done studies on clownfish, those little Nemo fish in the Nemo movie. And ocean acidification makes clownfish bold. They're very small. They are at the mercy of their predators. But for some reason, when they swim in acidified water, they become very bold and they stand up to their predators, which, as you might imagine, Jed, doesn't work out too well for the clownfish. So we really don't want this to happen. And the same kind of thing is happening with salmon up in the Pacific Northwest. Acidified water kind of confuses them. And we're just beginning to understand these relationships.
Well, you know, it makes sense, you know. The old expression, you are what you eat. You know, certainly there are foods, choices that we can make and what we feed ourselves that can definitely change our moods and how we behave. A lot of kids who, and I'm probably in that camp, who have, you know, the extra energy and have a hard time with attention. You know, if we eat certain foods, we can kind of deal with that better. So I guess it makes sense that if fish are swimming around in acidic waters, it will change the way that they behave.
It does. It really does. And I think that it has implications for us. One of the very important reasons that I wrote Planet Ocean, and I worked, incidentally, on this book with Annie Crawley. This is our third book we've teamed up for. And our whole goal in this book was to help children and their caregivers understand our connections to the ocean. So if clownfish or salmon are having trouble in acidified water, let's take salmon, for instance. If salmon are having trouble in acidified water, then that has ramifications for us, because you can't go to a restaurant or a fish market anywhere in the world and not see salmon on ice. So what happens to our food supply if salmon are swimming right through their predators rather than trying to avoid them?
You know, we mentioned it right at the top of the show. We know so little about the ocean. I had a chance to speak with Fabien Cousteau, and he was sharing with me that we probably only explored 5% of the ocean, and the ocean is most of the world. So we've really explored such a tiny part of the, I think when I was speaking with Fabien, it's like we've explored Boston and we've left out the rest of the North and South America.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
The ocean covers more than 70% of our planet. And when you look at a map, any map in any classroom in the United States is probably a Mercator projection. And I know that's getting a little technical, but Mercator projections sort of distort the sizes of various land masses. So Greenland looks the size of the entire continent of Africa, when it's only a fraction of the size of Africa. That's just a for instance. So what you're seeing on a map in a school classroom is actually wrong. You're not seeing the entire 70 plus percent of our ocean, or 70 plus percent of our planet, excuse me, that is ocean, because the map just isn't showing that. So we have to readjust our thinking and readjust the way we readjust our relationship with the sea.
Why do you think it is that we've explored so little of the ocean? I mean, because we do have this connection. We get so much of our food from the ocean. We rely on ocean and tides for a lot of energy and things like that. We certainly travel and send goods across the ocean, but we haven't taken the time to really explore it. Why do you think that might be?
No, I'm not exactly sure, Jed. It's a great question. I think part of it is because we're terrestrial beings. We live on the land. The ocean is foreign to most of us. And many of us scuba dive, but many of us don't. Many of us swim, but many of us are afraid of the water. Many of us think sharks are cool, and many of us think Jaws when we think about sharks. So we have these, you know, the ocean is oftentimes misrepresented in the media with movies like Jaws. As much as I love the movie Jaws, I'm not trying to disparage the movie, but sharks don't normally behave that way. So I think we need to re-educate ourselves about the ocean. And it's not just our food, and it's not just our recreation and the tides that control our weather, the oxygen makes about 50% of the oxygen that we breathe every single day, no matter if we live on the coast of California or we live in Nebraska. We are breathing ocean oxygen every single day. And the little tiny organisms called phytoplankton in the ocean that make oxygen have been doing so for about 1.75 billion years longer than plants and animals on land.
Wow. That's.
But when you were in school, you were probably taught that oxygen is made by trees and other plants, right?
Absolutely.
Your teacher probably didn't mention that phytoplankton in the ocean was making the lion's share of the oxygen that you're breathing.
Yeah. I definitely heard of phytoplankton. Not sure if it was in elementary school. That was like about 100 years ago. But you're right. We did have this, you know, the notion was that we got most of our oxygen from trees and from the Amazon and the rainforest and things like that. What was it that drew you to write Planet Ocean?
Well, for me to start any book project, I have to have a personal connection to it, Jed. And I grew up at the water. I grew up on lakes and rivers. I sailed with my dad. We went to the ocean constantly when we visited our relatives. I grew up in Vermont, so we were not on the coast, but we were on Lake Champlain. Mm-hmm. So the ocean was always, or the water was always part of my life. And as I became an adult, the ocean became part of my life. I lived in San Diego. I learned how to windsurf. You know, I learned how to do all the fun things that people do at the ocean. But then when I started snorkeling, I started to look below the surface and really start to question, why is all of this life here? What purpose does it have? And then when I met Annie Crawley, when we wrote Plastic Ahoy together, she gave me another focus of the ocean, another way to look at the ocean, a below the surface perspective. And in fact, to write Planet Ocean, she even gave me a scuba diving lesson so I would have that below the surface perspective. So, and she is in the Women's High Diver Hall of Fame. She is an ocean advocate. She's a brilliant, filmmaker and photographer. All of her pictures in Planet Ocean are by Annie Crawley. Our QR codes, that lead to videos that give readers an interactive aspect to this book are all produced by Annie Crawley, her footage. So, you know, meeting Annie and my personal ocean experiences were definitely all wound up together in writing this book.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned something that really is, I think, important. I remember I had snorkeled a little bit and put on some glasses and stuck my head underneath the water here in Boston Harbor and saw the horrors underneath the water and certainly in lakes. And that was cool. But it wasn't until I was down in Puerto Rico and had a chance to go snorkeling in the Caribbean and suddenly was exposed to this universe of life that existed there. And we're just talking about, you know, maybe 50, 60 yards from, you know, from the shoreline. And then just to, you know, let my imagination run wild and think, wow, what is even, you know, under there, way out there and going down real deep. I think it changes the way we look at the ocean. And I think we definitely have a better respect for the ocean.
I think you're right. I think the minute you have an experience with something, you learn to care about it. And once you care, you can protect it. It's funny that you mentioned the coral reefs because you call them a universe because coral reefs really are the cities of the underwater world because so much is happening there. The coral are layered with all different kinds of animals, and there are so many different forms of life on a coral reef that scientists haven't even identified them all. One of the people that we profile in our book, Planet Ocean, is a group of stories about lots of scientists and local and indigenous people and kids and teens who are experiencing climate change and doing something about it. But one of the scientists we interviewed, Daria Akinak, she has developed a new type of photography. She created this new algorithm, and to do that, she had to create new math. Just think about that. She developed new math with her colleagues. And what this algorithm does is it takes an underwater photograph of a coral reef, let's say, and eliminates the water. So scientists can begin to count and identify all the life forms that live on that reef. Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing. Wow. And I imagine the numbers we're talking about of organisms is huge. We're probably talking about tens of thousands, maybe.
Yes, exactly right. But the reason that coral reefs are so important to us is that about 25%, I think that's the right number, about 25% of all ocean life spends some time in a coral reef, whether they're using it as a nursery before they get big enough to swim out into the open ocean, or whether they just come and go. But coral reefs are sort of like these breeding grounds and these protective nurseries where smaller fish can grow bigger and finally go out into the open ocean and behave like adult fish.
Yeah. Now, I know that coral reefs are in danger. What are we doing that's endangering coral reefs, and what can we do? What can a typical family do to help protect them?
Well, this is an interesting question. I'm really glad you asked it. So what's happening is we are spewing tons and tons and tons of carbon dioxide into the air with machines, airplanes, cars, trains, you name it. And we've been doing so since the Industrial Revolution. And for a time, the ocean absorbs our carbon dioxide. So most people think of climate change as something that just happens on land. But what really happens is with all this excess carbon dioxide in the environment, some is absorbed on land, some is absorbed in the ocean, about 30%, about a third. And the problem with that is when carbon dioxide is absorbed by the ocean, there's a chemical change that happens with seawater. And this chemical change acidifies the water. Now, it's not making the water an acid. It's not as if the ocean is going to burn your toes if you step into it. Mm-hmm. The water is becoming slightly more acidified. So it's beginning to affect fish, like the way I said for Nemo and salmon. But also what's happening is this acidified water creates these hydrogen ions that suck up all of the carbonate ion that reefs need to grow. Reefs need to absorb this carbonate ion to grow and expand. And if they don't absorb enough of this carbonate ion, they become weak and they become victims of storms, or they might even start to dissolve. Another thing that's happening with our excess carbon dioxide is our oceans are warming. We've heard that about this term global warming, which I'm not sure I entirely like because it's a little misleading. Mm-hmm. But in the ocean, the excess carbon dioxide also makes the seawater a little bit warmer. Not a lot warmer. It's not boiling, but it's warm enough that it starts to affect the marine life. And one of the things that happens is the coral, I don't know if you knew this, but inside coral are animals, mm-hmm. and inside these little polyps, these little animals, are these algae. And when the water gets warm, the coral spits out this little algae. And the trouble with that is this algae provides most of the food for the coral. Mm. So when they spit it out, they starve. And you might have heard of coral bleaching. Well, mm-hmm. that's when everything on the reef dies. It kind of turns white and it's a dead reef. So there's really two problems: this warming water and this acidified water caused by climate change. Mm. Ah. What can we do about it? Well, we can try to reduce our carbon footprint by walking, taking buses, purchasing electric vehicles. None of that is perfect, though, and of course, we're only acting individually, but what we can really do is start to communicate with our representatives and asking them to go green. That's what we're encouraging kids to do in Planet Ocean. We're asking them to use pictures and video, and Annie is providing some of that, with the stories in Planet Ocean to tell their own ocean stories and to try to convince their community, their elected representatives, to take care of the planet.
Well, we certainly want to join you in that push for all of us to take action and take care of the planet. It's the only one we got.
Right. As the saying goes, there is no planet B.
Right, right. Yes. And even though we started off by talking about, you know, the fact that we are planning to go to Mars and planning to go to the moon, where no one's going to be living on Mars anytime in the near future.
But it's interesting, in most space exploration, Jed, what they're looking for is planets that have water. 70% of our planet, 72% of our planet is water, and we're not exploring it. So we need to explore our own planet and understand it before we go elsewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And just think about, I know I mentioned Fabien Cousteau earlier. We've had spoken to a number of oceanographers, and they all say the same thing. We need kids to become interested in the ocean. We need oceanographers and marine biologists and underwater photographers and people who can support that kind of research. So people on boats and ships and again, going back to, you know, what we've talked about in the past, that there's a place for everybody and a role for everyone to play in helping to learn more about the ocean and also help to save the ocean.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
And I think I lost my train of thought here, but I think one of the things that I'd like to tell kids is that they have the power to make a change. The youth in our world are stepping up and making some noise. And that's what Annie and I would like people to do, is make noise after they read Planet Ocean. We want to give young readers the power to do that.
And I'm assuming that you're telling young readers how to make that noise. You don't expect them to jump up in the library and start screaming in the library.
No. What we do have several stories within Planet Ocean that they can key off of. In one of the QR codes, for instance, that's in the Arctic chapter, we have a simulation from NASA about all of the ice that and how it is melting. And you can see how the ice is disappearing over a certain span of decades. Also in the back of the book, we have Annie's pro tips for visual storytelling. So she's giving children guidelines on how to take the best pictures and how to use images to tell stories. And we also have a section on Go Blue with Annie. So things like committing to zero waste and taking climate action and thinking before you eat. Are you eating, for instance, seafood that's sustainably caught? Or are you eating farmed seafood that may harm the ocean? And then there's also a way to be the voice of our ocean. Our Go Blue with Annie tips, we're really encouraging kids to become the voice of the ocean. Read books and articles. Talk about the ocean every day with their parents, with their classmates, with their teachers. Maybe write letters to community leaders or their state or federal senators. Write poems about the ocean. Write stories or make films of your own. Help change plastic policies within your community, your local restaurants, parks. participate in ocean cleanups, or maybe a lake or a river cleanup if you don't live by the ocean, because really most of our waterways end up flowing to the ocean.
Patricia, you've given us a lot of things to think about, a lot of great things for families to do together. I know families are going to want to know where to learn more about Planet Ocean, where they can find it, and also learn more about you and all the great books that you've created for families.
Well, you can buy Planet Ocean at bookshop.org. I love to support independent booksellers. So please visit bookshop.org. There, your sale will help local bookstores, independent bookstores. And then you can also find out more about me on my website at patriciammnewman.com.
Awesome. We've had a great time speaking about the ocean and what we can do to help it with the author of Planet Ocean, Patricia Newman. Patricia, thanks so much for being back with us tonight.
Thank you, Jed. It was fun.
Please be sure to join us for the next episode of the Reading With Your Kids podcast. Our guest will be Raina Marner-Ginton. That's the next episode of the podcast. Hey, if you are the author of a fantastic children's book, we would love for you to be a guest on the show. Being a guest, it's fun, it's easy, and it gives you the chance to tell thousands of people about your fantastic book. All you need to do is to go to our website, readingwithyourkids.com. Click on the author's Click Here button at the top of the page. Scroll on down to be a guest. I want to thank the folks who made today's show so wonderful. Of course, I want to thank our guest, Patricia Newman. Be sure to check out Planet Ocean. Also want to thank my team, Alejandro Daugherty, Fatima Khan, Helen Fraser, Justina Thompson. I want to thank my beautiful wife for all the support she gives me. Most of all, we want to thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. And as always, thank you so very much for taking the time to make the world a better place by reading with your kids. I'll be looking for you in the next edition of the Reading with Your Kids podcast.